Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Just over a week ago, Glenn Gulletson threw his stick into the crowd and asked his team, "Have you looked at the standings?" And here we are a week later, I'm looking at the standings and the Flames are number two in the Pacific. As always, I'm Dan Stevenson alongside Matt DeBorg. Matt, did you think after this road trip we'd be sitting at number two in the Pacific?
Well, it's good to see them where they're at, and hopefully they can keep it up. This is more of the type of team that I was expecting from this Flames team to start the year. So hopefully they can keep up in that spot and push forward.
Well, let's talk about the biggest story of the week, which is the Flames are on a 7-game win streak. Like, based on what we've seen from this team so far this season, sometimes they've struggled to put together 2 or 3 wins in a row, much less 7. What do you think's happening here? How do you think this team's gone on the 7-game streak? What's changed?
It harkens back to what we've been saying in past shows of death by 1,000 paper cuts, and where they were just making all these little tiny mistakes, and that was costing them games. They've clamped down on that. They're not making as many careless decisions, and it's following that they're getting wins. And when you're making less mistakes, you're putting yourself in a situation where you're forcing the other team to also match you in terms of not making mistakes. And it's natural for teams to do that, and Calgary's been capitalizing.
Yeah, I also, from what I've seen over the last week, the last 4 games, I think, too, the Flames have finally figured out how to play hockey. I don't want to say they've played a complete 60-minute game, but they're not coming out flat like we've seen before and stayed flat. They figured out how to play a, let's call it a playoff tempo game every game. They're playing like they need to fight for those wins. And they haven't all been great wins, but they've fought for every win they've got.
Yeah, and if you look at the Tampa Bay game, Tampa controlled the first period by and large and scored the first goal, and then Calgary just took over, and they were able to deal with the adversity and rise above it. And that's something that has been lacking at times in the early part of the season, where if something like that happened, then Tampa would go and score a second, a third, a fourth, and then by that time the game's already over.
The other thing I'm noticing from this team now is every line and every defensive pairing seems to have found their identity. It kind of seemed for the first part of the season it was Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and supporting cast. And it seems like now when I'm watching these games this week, we're seeing each line. And as that line comes on, you know what's expected of them. I think that everyone's kind of got their role and buying into what they need to do. And that's helping the team play the type of game they need based on who's on the ice.
Oh, for sure. And I think that partially has to do with the young players coming up from Stockton and them all performing at a high level. But we've also seen guys like Tkachuk and Backlund play better than they have of late. And that's important. You can't have a team that has as much talent as Calgary does and be in a position that they were prior to the winning streak, where they were in danger of not making the playoffs at all. And now we're starting to see the potential of this team being realized, and now it's just up to them to fight and try to catch Las Vegas.
Well, let's take a look at the week. The Flames came into this road trip having 3 wins at home, 2 in January at the Dome. Then they went on a 4-game road swing, which all started in Minnesota. And you and I were saying this was the game the Flames couldn't afford to give up a point in because it's against a Western Conference rival. And unfortunately, the Flames did. Hamilton scored with 2:20 left after Minnesota rallied down. Really made this a game. I mean, the Flames were up by 2 goals. Minnesota rallied back, and Dougie Hamilton ended up sealing the deal with 2:20 left in overtime. I don't know about you, I thought this was a fun game to watch. It was nice to see the Flames get a lead, like we talked about. It was good to see that as Minnesota started to rally back, the Flames still controlled that. Yeah, they got a couple goals, but the Flames didn't let it get away from them. And there's something sweet about Dougie scoring in this one. And just a general note, it seems like he's played better since Freddie's left.
Yeah, the team, this is what has changed, where before, if any adversity happened, the team seemed to collapse in on itself. And now what we're seeing is that, okay, yeah, Calgary gave up the two goals, but they stuck with their game plan and ended up coming out with 2 points. And in the end of last month, the San Jose game, it was the same story where they were up by 2 goals heading into the third period and ended up losing that one. And it's slowly starting to turn around. And yeah, it's unfortunate that the Flames gave up a point to Minnesota, but it's also a little less unimportant just due to the fact that they're in the Central Division, so not 100% direct competition, but still.
The next game, probably the most important game of this week. The Calgary Flames took on one of the best teams, the team tied for best in the NHL at the time, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They've been a powerhouse and ended up beating the Lightning 5-1. I think you and I both thought, you know what, there's a chance we could beat the Lightning. I don't think either of us thought it'd be a 5-1 victory.
No, well, that was the biggest defeat for the Lightning this season by any team. So, and I think they've only lost like 4 games at home. I think Minnesota and Tampa are the two best home teams in the league. So, are two
the interesting
the
story is going to be what happens when we see these guys February 1st.
Yeah. So, it was good that they played. You know, Tampa is a very good team, but they also strike me as a team that won't actually go to like the cup finals or anything like that, just due to the makeup of their team. They tend to be a little reckless with their defensemen. And while they have a lot of skill back there, they jump up into the play a little too much. And if they run into any good team who can play defense, they're basically, their goose is cooked. So I don't see them being a true cup threat, even though they're the best team in the league. It's sort of like Washington.
Yeah, I think they're very much a glorified version of what Edmonton's roster will be. It's all forwards, a decent defenseman. And if you can get a team that can trap those forwards, you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
Interesting note here, pretty much everybody on the Flames had at least 1 point on the night. The only guys that didn't were Michael Backlund, Matt Stajan, Curtis Lazar, Andrew Mangiapane, Travis Hamonic, and Stone, and Kulak. So everyone else had at least 1 point on the night. So I guess that's what you get when you got 5 goals. And it was nice to see, too, the goals coming from everywhere. It wasn't one line. We had Ferland, Goudreau, Bennett, Jankowski, Tkachuk. So goals coming all up and down the lineup, which is really what we need if we're going to be successful.
Oh, definitely, for sure. And this team, if they're relying on one line to carry them, they're not going to do very much. And you have to look that most teams in the league have a couple of high-end players, whether it's Gaudreau, Monahan, Draisaitl, McDavid, anybody else, really, and Getzlaff and Perry, you know what I mean. But what separates the good teams from the not-so-good teams are the secondary players, and if Calgary is getting high-quality contributions from Backlund, Tkachuk, Bennett, Jankowski, and all the other assorted players on those lines, then Calgary becomes a extremely dangerous team to play against, especially if they're all rolling at the same time.
The fact that not only we beat Tampa Bay, but we beat them 5-1, I don't know about you, to me, this was kind of my turning point of the week. There's the game where I really sat down and went, maybe the Flames can do this. Maybe the Flames can clinch one of the top three spots in the West. Like, if you can beat the number one team in the league like that, they should theoretically be able to beat almost anybody.
Yeah, well, Calgary pushed themselves into the top 10 overall in the standings once they hit, after they beat Carolina. So, and realistically, this team in terms of just talent and depth should be one of the top 6 or 7 teams in the league.
They're starting to play like they look on paper.
Yeah, and that was why like we were so confused earlier in the season, because of the fact that here's a team that should be doing well, and they're basically with Edmonton. And you know, you look at Vegas and like they're doing well and they really should be down in like 8th or 10th. So it's one of those things that things regress to where they're supposed to be in general most of the time. So like I don't expect Vegas to be as good at the end of the season just because they don't have quite as much talent as they need to sustain it.
Even if they get lucky this season and they stay, you know, somewhere in the top three in the Pacific, I think they're going to be terrible next year. You can't duplicate this.
No, because teams will have a book on them. And once that happens, I don't expect them to make the playoffs next year.
So the night after the Tampa Bay game, the Flames went for a back-to-back, the second of the back-to-back in Florida, where they took on the Panthers. David Rittich got the start and stopped 41 shots in a 4-2 win over the Panthers. I know you're a Panthers fan. What'd you think of this game?
I thought that Rittich played extremely well, and he's played extremely well in basically every one of his starts, and he was a driving factor for the Flames getting 2 points.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely... I wouldn't say that Rittich bailed them out in this game like we've seen with Smith sometimes, but he was what kept the Flames in the game. And it's nice to see, I think, for the first time in a long time, the Flames are confident playing in front of their backup.
Yeah, and I think you have to go all the way back to Roman Turek for the Flames to have a high-quality backup.
Back when there was a man named Mika Kiprusoff backing him up?
Yeah, just some goalie, yeah.
Well, after that, we've had like... I can't even name all the backups. They bring in weird backups for, you know, Kipper for a year.
Well, I know, like McElhinney, Philippe Sauvé, Brian Boucher, Cujo, like a lot, and Danny Taylor, Leland Irving, Matt Keatley, like just a ton of different.
Yeah,
no name guys.
Bunch of no name guys. It was always a one horse town in terms of the goal.
Yeah.
What surprised me about Rittich is you got to think about this guy started the year as the backup on the A and now looks NHL ready.
Yeah, and not only that, he looks like he could eventually develop into a starting caliber goaltender, which, hey, awesome. You can never complain when having too much goalie depth. You know, like Parsons and Gillies develop too. Oh, gee, we have too many good goalies.
You might have a reason for once to carry three netminders.
Yeah. Not so, just stack them in net so that way you can keep the goals out.
You got a first period goalie, a second period goalie, and a third period goalie. This game we saw again Monahan, Tkachuk, Goudreau, Bennett, or Backlund score. So, you know, the four guys I think that should be getting goals were getting goals here. Good to see Monahan back on the score sheet. Monahan's hasn't been scoring as much in December as we want him to, but he's getting out there. And I think also interesting in this game, I really noticed it here. Brouwer's been playing on that second line with Tkachuk and Backlund and actually contributing.
Well, that's the thing. Brouwer has not been allowed to play Brouwer's game this season. And even last year, frankly. He is a physical player who's a bit of a pain in the ass most of the time to play against, and he's not really been allowed to hit a ton, and now he being on the line with Tkachuk and Backlund, that more fits his style of game, and he doesn't mind mucking it up with players, and now he's being able to contribute offensively like he did prior to coming to Calgary.
Yeah, I've just noticed him. I mean, we've noticed him a lot sometimes for the wrong reasons. Some games you don't notice him because he's buried on that fourth line. But here I've said, you know what? Brouwer actually is contributing. I mean, we're not seeing pucks go in the net, but I don't think they have to necessarily for him. But he's doing all the right things. And I think this might be the new lease on life that Troy Brouwer needs to show, hey, maybe I can stay here and not just be a deadweight contract.
Yeah, well, it would be good for him as a player. You don't want to ever see a player who's has multiple years left on his contract be basically AHL waiver bait. You know, like that's...
And I mean, the coach has given him the opportunity and good for him for seizing it.
Yeah, and that's the important thing. He's getting that opportunity and thankfully taking advantage of it.
And then the last game of the week, the one I was worried about, if you remember when we talked last week, thinking the Flames might have their heads in the clouds, already thinking about their bye week, the Calgary Flames rolled into Raleigh, North Carolina, and ended up with a 4-1 win over the Hurricanes. Matt Stajan got his first goal of the year in this one. Dougie Hamilton continued his scoring with 2 goals. And, of course, Tkachuk made the score sheet.
And the goal horn guy gets an assist on one of the Hamilton goals.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff going on this game.
Yeah, that was a really bizarre one. That whole play where the Hurricanes player McGinn looked like he scored but didn't. And then everybody's like, oh, good, we scored. And
quick, run it down to the other way.
Yeah.
So
that was a bizarre one, but it happens. Not you know often, but you know, it's always on like one of the sports centers like fails of the week.
Yeah, it'll be one on the fail of the year, probably at the end of 2018.
Yeah.
And, I mean, luckily it's not like that goal won us the game where you could say, oh, maybe they shouldn't have won. Like, that was one of 4 goals.
Yeah, and Calgary dominated the game pretty much.
They did. This game is really, I think, of this whole road trip, probably the best Calgary game. This team looked really dominant against the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes have struggled a little bit. I mean, you know, I was a Scott Darling fan going into this season. Scott Darling's really struggled this year, I think, taking on that starter load. But overall, I thought that the Hurricanes just looked flat in this one. I haven't watched a lot of their hockey and all they've looked, but there's guys I expect to perform better that didn't. And they looked flat. Maybe their heads were in the cloud thinking about their bye week.
Well, that's exactly it. They were on their third game in 4 nights, just like we were. And their bye week started at the same time. So I think they were just mentally checked out.
The story in this game for me was the line changes. So Sean Monahan was out. He was injured, sick. We're not really sure. To me, it's, you know, doesn't really matter.
Hey, get an extra couple days off.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Oh, I'm sick. I started partying a little too early. I don't know. Hungover. Who knows? But, you know, of all times to be hurt, what a great time before the bye week, right?
Yep. And at least he gets the opportunity to rest up a little bit more. And I think reason why he's looked off recently, I think, is that he's been dealing with a couple of nagging minor things.
Yeah, we didn't need him in this one, and it gave some guys a chance to step up. We saw, I think, the biggest change to the lineup was that Sam Bennett was promoted back to center, playing on the first line between Goudreau and Ferland. You know, I've talked about potentially doing this for the last little bit. And it also meant that Marek Hrivík made his Flames debut for his career Flames debut in Calgary in a regular season game. And he was on the fourth line with Stajan and Lazar. Let's talk about that first line first. What'd you think of Bennett going back to center and playing that high in the lineup?
That didn't hurt. He wasn't as good as Monahan, but, you know, give me a break.
But when we saw Sam play center early in the year, he looked lost. Like, yeah. He looked like he just couldn't play center anymore.
Well, it also helps when you have an 18-goal guy on your right side and the second leading scorer in the NHL on your left. So, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, he's looking better, but he's also got significantly better line mates than he did at the beginning of the year on the third line.
Yeah, I wouldn't leave him there for sure, but it was nice to see that he could step up. He works well with those guys. I thought he did well, and maybe this will help with the confidence, and maybe you see him play center a little bit more after this. Like, hey, you were able to play center, Sam. Let's put you back on center somewhere else in the lineup and see if you can do it again, because I have to think this team would like him to play more center than left.
Yeah, well, just value-wise, it makes more sense to have Sam Bennett as a center versus a left winger.
I wouldn't even be surprised if you see him and Janko swap on the third line.
I wouldn't go that far. Jankowski's an excellent defensive center. I think that probably looking at is, do we need Michael Backlund? And I think that's where the calculus is. Because if the Flames feel that they can get away with just letting Backlund walk or trade him at the deadline and have Bennett basically take his spot on the second line, then that would be fine. But they have to see if Bennett's actually able to do that. And I think in a case like that, you'd probably see Bennett on the first line with Gaudreau and Monahan with Tkachuk on the second line.
Yeah, I was pitching that around to you last week. It was the idea of breaking those two guys up. I'd be okay with that. I just think that in that case, then, you really need two right wingers, and that's where my worry gets to be, is do we have two bona fide right wingers to make those complete lines?
Yeah, and I think at that rate,
I think if you trade Backlund, you could get a right winger for Backlund.
True, and similarly, if you were to trade a defenseman, you could get a right winger as well. So there's lots of different scenarios that we could go into, but granted, Michael Ferland,
deadline, let's save some of that for February.
Exactly, and plus Michael Ferland's doing an adequate job, kind of as I think the third or fourth highest scoring right winger in the NHL. So I think he'll do for now.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's no real rush. It's just if you can, then great.
I wouldn't say there's no rush. I would say that this needs to be addressed for the puck drops next season. I don't think you can address it mid-season this year. There is a timeline on that. But I think that by, you know, when we drop the puck in October of next year, this has to be dealt with.
Yeah, well, it's just like the Flames needed to get a high-quality defenseman last year after dealing with Weidman in England.
The theme of this last offseason was defensemen.
Yeah.
I mean, we really upgrade our defense. And I think this next offseason, it's got to be right wingers.
Yeah. And they did get a couple of different options in there with, like, Spencer Fu and Jager.
Spencer Fu's not your answer as a number one wing.
Try and at least, you know, have Band-Aid solutions. But obviously, they didn't pan out as expected. But... you know,
I don't think anybody realistically thought Fu goes on that number one right wing.
No, but trying to address the organizational problem at right wing.
So with those four games, the Flames have swept their four-game road trip and extend their season-long win streak to 7. They're now alone in the second seed in the Pacific Division, and they've got a little bit of breathing room there, which is kind of nice. If you take a look, the Flames are at 54 points. LA is breathing right down their neck at 53. And then we've got San Jose at 52, Colorado at 51, Chicago at 50 points. So a little bit of breathing room there. Not a whole lot, but it gives the Flames a little bit of cushion. I'm hoping that even when they come back from this bye week, they can build up some more points and
cushion
when we start losing again.
The 7-game winning streak, like the 10-game or last year, just erased the problems that they got themselves into at the start of the year. And now, okay, they've hit the reset button. Season starting now. Go kick some ass. And right now, everything, like, they're still in that they could fall out of the picture quite easily, or they can advance and try to take on Vegas for the division. So they're in that crossroads of which direction do they want to go. And great, you won 7 games, but that just erased some of the mistakes that plagued the season right through Christmas.
So Vegas is 7 points up on us right now. They're at 61 points and we're at 54. I don't necessarily know that we need to be gunning for Vegas. I'm not saying that it's, you know, you don't want to be number one, but I think if we can just focus on maintaining that number two spot, I'm okay with that for the rest of the season. I think there's such competition there. Instead of trying to shoot for Vegas, I'd say just try to maintain number two.
Shoot for the stars, and for me, and... realistically, the Flames should be the best team in our division. So,
go realistically, out. Vegas shouldn't be anywhere close, though, my friend.
True. And that's why they need to set their sights on them and go take them out. Because Vegas shouldn't be there, so go win.
Yeah.
And we play, yeah, I mean, I'm we not, play I'm them not four times. So, you know, it's not like all of our games against them are in the books. We still can have 8 points on the board against them, so... we just have to
and that's
go
and an
get
interesting
them.
Point too. There's 7 points up on us right now, and there's 8 points left between the two of us to play. So even just winning those could be the difference.
Yep.
Well, Matt, before we move away from this week, let's talk about the last call up of the week. The last call up the Flames made before the Carolina game, didn't get into the game, but was called up, was Ryan Lomberg. He was called up before that game. Really just as the insurance marker in case someone wasn't ready to go after we found out that number 23 wasn't going to play. I found this one a little confusing. I don't know about you. My question is, do you think that Lomberg was the next guy who deserved a call-up?
Yes. In terms of role, like, you're not going to put Lomberg on the first or second line. And I think that the Flames had enough options for depth spots that they were fine. So it was that they needed somebody that, if they needed to play somebody else, that they could do so.
I guess the way I look at it is there's guys on this team, guys maybe a little bit older, guys that have been around a bit longer, who I say, you know what, maybe we need to see what we've got in these guys before we see what we've got in Ryan Lomberg. We know what Ryan Lomberg's upside is. We know what type of player he is, but I'd be more curious to say, okay, what do we have out of a Hunter Shinkaruk or an Emile Poirier or a Morgan Klimchuk? Those, to me, are the guys they should be pulling up right now, not Ryan Lomberg.
Well, conversely, I think it's the exact opposite. Those three guys need to show that they can kick some butt down in Stockton. And with all the other guys getting recalled, they're being leaned on as being the leaders on Stockton's team. And they need to put points up and show that, okay, yeah, I'm deserving now. And frankly, all three of them have been just okay down there. And okay doesn't cut it. And Lomberg, like Hathaway, has just been the little engine that could down there. And he's been doing all the right things for Stockton. Yes, his upside is limited just in the same manner that Hathaway's is. But you have to be willing to reward players that are giving their utmost of their potential. And Lomberg, to his credit, has been an exceptional player for Stockton and has that drive of always going, always going, always going. And that, I think, is what separates him from the other guys, is that the other three players, while they have more talent intrinsically, they're not utilizing themselves in the manner that they need to be a success at the NHL level. And they haven't shown enough to merit any additional consideration right now. They need to start putting up some numbers down in Stockton.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I guess when I saw the call-up, I thought, well, if you want that kind of guy, you've already got Hathaway here. So I was just kind of going, well, if this guy's coming in to replace essentially number 23, not necessarily on line one, but as a, let's say, top nine, top six guy, I didn't know that Lomberg was the right one. And I knew he probably wouldn't play anyways.
No.
But just kind of an interesting choice for a call-up.
Yeah, realistically, if they needed to insert Lomberg in the lineup, you likely would have seen, say, Curtis Lazar move up from the fourth line up to whichever spot was needed, and then Lomberg on the fourth line.
I think even as an older guy, you might have seen Hrivik moved up as well.
True.
So, Matt, we've talked about some of the call-ups. We've talked about, you know, who's been called up in the past. We've got Mangiapane here. We've got Hathaway here. We've got Jankowski here. We're seeing the AHL young guys who deserve to be here up here. A number of these guys were sent back. Makes sense. There's some Stockton games to be played over the week. My question to you is, who do you think comes back up for the team after the break, and who do you think stays here for the rest of the year as we start to see players get healthy again with Frolik coming back and potentially Versteeg coming back? Who do you think will stay on this team until the end of the season?
Well, I think Mangiapane, even though he's only been playing sheltered fourth line minutes, I think he's earned a spot in the lineup full time. And that's actually kind of surprising. He's been an exceptionally decent player on the fourth line. So he's been better than any of the other options, frankly, that have played on the fourth line for most of the season. So I think he's earned a chance to at least continue to see if he can keep it up. And as for everybody else, like Hrivik and Lomberg, I don't see them coming back if everybody's healthy.
I know where you're going with Mangiapane, and I agree with you, but you know my stance on things too. I also look at a guy like Sam Bennett and think, was he rushed to the NHL? And I think with Mangiapane, I would be more inclined to send him back down to Stockton, let him tear it up down there and come back next year and say, you got a taste of the show. Keep doing what you do in the AHL and we'll bring you back up. Because I'm not sure that the best place for him is playing fourth line or even third line NHL minutes. And I don't know where you slot him higher than that in the Flames lineup.
Well, it also depends on what role you envision him to be moving forward. Like, if you're expecting him or wanting him to become a top six forward, then it doesn't make a lot of sense for him to be in the NHL until he's ready to assume one of those spots. But if you're expecting him to be basically a defensive guy who can chip in a little bit offensively, then having him on the third or fourth line is perfectly fine, because that's where you're ideally wanting him to be anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess for me, I would look at him as probably a middle six forward. We saw him on the third line with Jankowski and Hathaway last game. I think he looks fine there. I just don't know that right now. I think you almost need to try him higher up the lineup to see what you've got, but I just don't know where you slot him in.
And that's the hard part, because he's a good player, but there's no high-end flashy skill that like just screams like, oh, this guy's a top six forward. Like, he's a very complete player, but there's just no separating force. And I don't know. I think you basically have to just play him and see if he merits more ice time based on his play. Because it's one of those things where he could just storm up the lineup and force himself up the lineup. And where, like, you just look at how he plays and, okay, he's decent, but not the guy that you're expecting to be the go-to guy. It's much the same thing with Michael Ferland. Like, everybody kind of penciled him in as a fourth line player, not as a 18 goal scorer in January.
I think part of Ferland's thing is he just got lucky because he's a right shot.
And not only that, he started playing hockey late, and I think that he never really had his upper ceiling established.
I think he was given a role and he played that role, and that's why he made the team. I mean, you know, if we look back at the Flames system, he would not have been recalled to be a top six forward. He was recalled to be what Garnet Hathaway is right now. He was recalled to be the sandpaper in this lineup.
Oh, definitely. Well, and you can even see that back when the Flames played the Canucks in 2014-2015.
Well, that's why we all fell in love with him, because he was, you know, getting under Bjesa's skin.
Exactly. And I think that with his offensive skill in that he displayed in that series, that I think that partially raised some eyebrows that, hey, maybe there's some untapped potential there. And I think that with Mangiapane, if he gets the opportunity to play and then starts to exhibit higher end skill, then perhaps he gets bumped up the lineup to see if he can play more.
Yeah, I guess I just look at when we come back, when guys start coming back. I mean, with Frolik coming back, with potentially Versteeg coming back, you're not going to sit those guys. Is it just, you know, Lazar that you bring in out of lineup, or does somebody lose their spot to a guy like Versteeg when he's back?
Well, I think in a case like when Frolik comes back, I think you see Matt Stajan become Freddie Hamilton, and Lazar remains in the lineup as the fourth line center, and things just carry on.
Yeah, you could be right there, and then you just put Versteeg into essentially Stajan's roster spot.
Yeah, and you just bump like everybody else down and move on.
The thing that I think is interesting about these call-ups right now is I think that you could see a guy like Versteeg lose his job next year because of the call-ups. I think that, you know, this team looking at him, I mean, he's fragile. We knew that when he came in. He's been hurt. He didn't play great. But I think instead of bringing in another veteran guy like a Stajan, like a Versteeg, you know, a cheap veteran guy on free agent signing in July, I can see the team saying, you know what, let's plug the holes with kids.
Yeah, well, realistically, the Flames, what they will start to need to do is to move away from guys like Frolik and Brouwer and the higher priced middling players that are, you need to have cheap guys that can play in your lineup in order to be successful consistently. And realistically, the Flames should only be looking at high end skill players from now on.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need veterans. You can't go like the Oilers where you're a bunch of kids. But as our guys start to mature, they're going to become the veterans as well. And that's, you know, I mean, guys like Goudreau, guys like Monahan have been around this league for a while now. They can become your veterans. But we're also seeing that, yeah, you're right. I mean, we spend a lot of money on veteran players, whether it's Stajan, whether it's Brouwer, whether it's Frolik. And I think at some point you've got to say, let's try to fill those holes internally first.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why, like I was saying, to trade a defenseman for a forward before, because that would basically kill two birds with one stone because of the fact the Flames have too much money tied up in their defense. And while it's a great defense, they also have high-quality prospects that are ready to play. So between all of those factors, you're like putting everything more into the correct balance throughout the lineup of what you're trying to allocate to which positions and all that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the blue line. We haven't talked about them in a while, really in depth. We talk a lot about the forwards. Our pairings right now are Giordano Hamilton, Brody Hamonic, Kulak, and Stone. I think we both agree that Kulak is probably impressed this year with how well he's come around. I also think, and tell me if you think differently, I think that Rasmus Anderson is ready to play in a third line pairing.
Oh, definitely. And he could play tomorrow.
And I think part of when the Flames signed Stone, part of what I liked about it was Giordano tends every couple years to get really hurt. Like, there's always, and it always seems to be late in the season, there seems to be that long Giordano injury.
And it's usually just some random fluke. Like, he got hit by Clutterbuck in an awkward way, and it screwed up his shoulder. The bicep injury. Like, it just weird random stuff, but it does happen.
And as he's getting older, I think it might happen more often.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that the Flames also need to look at is, eventually, do you move away from Giordano and utilize his cap hit elsewhere if you want to keep the younger defenseman?
I don't know. I think there's other moves you can make besides getting rid of another captain.
True.
I mean, being a Flames captain always seems to end in trade around here.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gio's a good guy. I mean, he's a good organizational guy. He's a good community guy. He's not a big contract relative to other guys who are number one defensemen. I don't think there's a need to move from him.
I agree.
But, you know, I mean, Stone, when they signed Stone, I always looked at Stone and said Stone could be that guy that if Gio's out for 2-3 weeks, he could step into the top four and play very well. I'm not convinced Kulak or Raz are ready for that yet. And I think that's one of the reasons to maybe keep Stone around, especially if we're looking at a playoff spot. But, you know, he's an asset we could move. And I guess my question with him is his contract too big to get much of value? Like, he's making 3.5 as a number five defenseman. Our team's going to look at that and say, too rich for me.
Well, that's the thing. Calgary's defense is a little bit different in that we're extremely deep. And Stone is a top four defenseman pretty much on any other team in the NHL. It's just Calgary. Like, you just look at the top four and you go, yeah, it makes sense that Stone's the number five. And
Stone was in the top four last year when we brought him in.
Yeah, exactly.
I was talking to a friend of mine and he had an interesting idea. He said, I wonder if Vegas would take a swing at Stone.
There's a lot. You could, like, if you said Stone's available, I think you'd have about 25 buyers, frankly. Because he's a good defenseman. You might not necessarily get a ton for him, but you could trade him. Like,
I think if you're willing to swallow some of his money, you'd probably get a lot more.
True.
I mean, Stone at $1.5 million or $2 million is a very good deal. Stone at 3.5, I could see teams going, maybe not.
Yeah.
And I mean, swallowing $1.5 million or $1 million for a couple of years wouldn't hurt the Flames all that much either, if it meant enough of a boost in what you'd get. If you could say go from a fourth to a second in return or something like that, I'd be willing to do it.
Yeah, everything just depends on what the parameters are. But there would be no problem trading Stone. Like, defensemen of any quality are always hard to come by. That's why I was advocating trading a top four defenseman for a star forward, because of the fact that defense are so hard to come by that you can get a star forward for a legitimate top four defenseman.
And I mean, we've seen, you know, three forwards from the AHL push their way into this lineup. And I think between Jankowski, Mangiapane, and Hathaway, you're right, they'll be here for a while. If not, two of them will be. We don't have that kind of room on defense. And at some point, whether you like Stone and you like Hamonic and you like Brody and you like Hamilton and Geo, you have to make room. I mean, you can't say to a guy like Razzo, sorry, you got to stay in the A because we have no room. There's no value in Kulak, I don't think, even if you wanted to move him. The value there is in either Stone, Brody, or Hamonic. And I think by this time next year, one of them has to be moved. Like, we just have to make some room.
Yeah.
Whether that's a deadline deal, whether that's a draft deal.
There's some way to do it. It just
there
depends.
Is. I don't think it'll be Hamonic. You don't give up what you gave up for Hamonic and flip him the next year.
It might be even Hamilton, depending on the deal. Like,
the thing I can see about Brody is Brody has the best deal of all of them, and I can see that being attractive to some cash-strapped team.
Yep, and that's the thing. It just depends on what the deal is, and we all know what Calgary needs. It just, does the other team have what we need and are willing to give them up?
Right now, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, again, being 6 weeks out from the deadline, we'll talk about the trade deadline more in February, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Flames stand pat with where they're at this year, trying to make a run, and then address one of those issues in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a net move you have to make now or before the deadline.
Yeah, and I think that if the Flames did make a larger deal, like, say, a defenseman for a forward-type deal, then you could get... you could see another deal where the Flames get like a decent number six defenseman just as a rental type.
Yeah,
just
I think like in that case, though, the guy has to become the number seven because you don't bring
exactly.
I mean, if you make a move, you're doing it to make room for Rasmus Anderson.
Oh, definitely. And it's just an upgrade on Bartkowski, basically.
Yeah, what I could see the Flames doing there if they wanted to is take on somebody's overpriced rental and say, look, we're going to take some salary off your hands for the rest of the season. Like you said, an overpaid number five,
yeah,
number six.
Like, I wouldn't be paying more than like a fifth or sixth for any of like,
I don't even think you give up something. I think it's all part of a package. We'll give you Stone for a forward and we'll do you a favor and take back some overpriced defensemen.
Yeah.
To get them off your books.
Yeah, I can see that.
Very similar to when they brought in, what's his name from Minnesota, the goalie a couple years ago.
Backstrom.
And it's like, hey, he's old, he's here. It was a favor to somebody. We gave up nothing for him. You know, and I think especially if you're going to be a playoff team, having another veteran body in the dressing room, especially if it's someone who had some playoff experience, couldn't hurt. Last question while we're talking about the AHL guys, is there anyone else you think deserves a call up this year? A guy that you think we have to see by the end of the year?
Shillington and Anderson. I think that they need to give them at least a game or two each of them. Like, even if it's at the end of like the last couple of games of the season, sort of like what they did with Riddick and Gillies last year, where they each got a game. And I think that the Flames will, at the very bare minimum, need to get both of those guys a game just to both to see where they're at and to keep them hungry.
Well, especially as we get into late March, early April, you're going to start shutting down some of your, you know, your Giordanos and Hamilton. So I think there's definitely a spot to get them in there. Knock on wood, we've been pretty healthy so far on the blue line. I think that's part of the reason we haven't seen those guys. But I agree with you. The next call-ups we have to see are blue liners. I've heard some people say Fu's not ready. Fun story, fun name, not quite ready for a call-up yet. And while I don't think they need to be a call-up, I think the Flames have some big decisions to make with guys like Poirier, like Klimchuk, like Shinkarak, as to are these guys Calgary Flames going forward?
Yeah, and I think that you just basically keep them in the organization for another year or two just to see if they're going to bloom late. Because sometimes players do that, and if they don't, oh well.
I don't know. I can also see, I mean, Calgary's lacking some draft picks. I could see sending one or two of them out of here at the deadline to recoup some draft picks.
Yeah, and that's possible too.
You know, I could totally see a deal where it's Hunter Shinkarak for a third.
Yeah.
Or Morgan Klimchuk for a fourth somewhere.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Poirier is a bit of a different deal. I'm a fan of his, but I think coming back from what he went through last year and being out with his addictions, you got to give him a year to play through it and then say next year is your make or break year. I thought this year was going to be his make or break year, but I think with everything he's gone through, you got to give him one more. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see this lineup reminds me very much right now of where we were at kind of this time in the first season with Bob Hartley, where we saw guys who shouldn't have been in the lineup, like Juris and guys like that, pushing their way in and making a name for themselves. And I think guys like Hathaway, you know, in that same position, guys like Riddick, it's just interesting to see that they're finally saying, okay, if you earn this spot, you're going to stay here.
I agree. And we'll just see how the team responds moving forward. And like, there's nothing really set in stone because of the fact that, like we saw with Juris, he was great the 1 year, and then the year after, he just vanished entirely.
It's like a David Moss.
Yeah. So it just depends, and we just have to wait and see. There's just not enough information yet.
Matt, what do you think the probability is after the break that the Flames wave Stajan and send him to Stockton?
Zero.
You think he stays here as the 13th forward?
Yeah.
He's so involved in the Calgary community as much as we might. I still think it would have been a good idea to get a veteran leader down there and stick the C on him, but he's so involved here in Calgary, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think his contract runs out, and then that's it.
Yeah, I if Stajan comes back next year as a Flame, something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Even if it's in $1 million, we've got to move on. It's time to move on.
Yeah.
I think you'll get an NHL deal somewhere. I just don't think it'll be in Calgary. I can see him going somewhere that needs some veteran help. I guess see him going somewhere like Phoenix.
Yeah. Or even
or
Edmonton.
Vegas. Yeah, or Edmonton. I mean, he likes Alberta, stay here near his wife. I think he'd fit in well in Edmonton.
They'd actually have an NHL player on their fourth line.
The question is, what would it cost them? Are they going to pay him $3.3 million?
6 years at $4 million.
Looking at the depth there and the fact I think that they're going to end up having to move at least one big piece before the deadline, I could honestly see Stajan being a top six.
Yeah, it's the Oilers are just great.
Well, I just think that one more piece from that Oilers lineup has to be moved, and I can see making a big deal for a defenseman somewhere.
Yeah, well, I think Nugent Hopkins days as an Oiler are going to be closing very soon. And
this isn't the Edmonton Oilers show, but I could see a trade like Nugent Hopkins for Ekman Larson, pending they can get him to agree to a deal first.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
So, and then in that case, I could see Stajan. I mean, who else is there? Stajan could be a top six. Maybe Stajan's the, you know, setup man for convert him to a wing and make him the setup man for McDavid.
Well, the thing is that they just need to clone McDavid 11 times and then they'll have an NHL lineup. It's just, you know, until they allow.
Can
that.
They afford to clone McDavid 11 times? He's taking up like 20% of their cap.
True.
He's, what, $10 million? You got $70 million? So you can only afford six more of him.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't know if that would...
Yeah, the Oilers are just a mess. But, you know, that's perfectly fine.
We again asked, as we always do, for fans on Twitter and Facebook to give us any questions they want us to talk about. And friend of the show, Ryan, at 76 Swanson on Twitter, asked us a really good question, something I hadn't really thought of, and he's got me thinking now. He said, in 3 years, who should be the letters? And I imagine he means who should be the captain and alternates for the Calgary Flames. Matt, what are your thoughts 3 years from now?
The captain, I think, will be Sean Monahan. And I think the assistant captains will be probably Matthew Tkachuk, and I'm going to have to go with TJ Brody if he's still here.
I think 3 years from now, Gio will be 37. I think that'll be his last year in the NHL, and I think he'll still be captain. I don't think he'll be out of here in the next 2 years, and I don't think you take the C off him while he's a Flame.
Well, I don't see him. I think he'll be a cap casualty where the Flames will have to move him just because not that
I think if it gets to that point, he just retires.
No. He'll play as long as he can. You know, if you're getting paid, you know, you're not going to, oh, well, you know, I don't feel like doing this anymore.
I don't know. I don't see him having a drop in production. I think the Flames will find a way to hang on to him.
We'll see.
But, yeah, no, I think Monahan's definitely the next captain of this team. I just don't know 3 years from now it'll be him. I think the alternate will be Tkachuk, and I think the set. So if it is Monahan, let's go with yours. If it's Monahan, I think Tkachuk's one alternate, and I think that there's a player yet to be acquired who becomes a second alternate. I think you get a guy like Troy Brouwer, who's the veteran guy who comes in and wears the A. I don't think all three letters are on this team right now.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think, you know, at some point, Troy Brouwer's the grizzled vet. Matt Stajan's a grizzled vet. Those guys have worn letters, you know, for years. I mean, Stajan was an alternate. Brouwer's an alternate. I think that Monahan's the next leader. I think I could see Tkachuk being the alternate. And I think some veteran guy, whether it's on the forward or the blue line, wears that. If Giordano is still the captain in 3 years, which I think will happen, I think Monahan is one of the alternates. And again, I think we have some veteran as another alternate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it necessarily has to be your top veteran. I think it could be a depth guy like a Versteeg or somebody like that. You know, a Jágr type who's your third line guy, but is that veteran leader in the dressing room. And I think especially if this team's going to be a Stanley Cup contender in a couple of years, usually you've got that guy who is there really for the veteran leadership.
I agree. Sort of like Brian Campbell when he was with the Blackhawks initially.
Yeah, or what I think that Jágr was really brought in to be. Wasn't, I don't think, brought in to be the number one right winger. He was brought in to be the, you know, the old sage. And, you know, I wouldn't have given him an A, but I think you easily could have.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Ryan, we'd be curious to hear what you think. And if anyone else wants to chime in, tweet us on Twitter or let us know on Facebook who you think should wear the letters in 3 years. We'd be curious to hear what you guys think. And with that, let's talk about the poll. Let's talk about what our fans actually did talk to us about. Last week, we talked a little bit about Yermer Jágr and his time in Calgary apparently over. The Flames officially put him on the IR. We asked you guys, what do you think will happen with Yermer Jágr? 37% of you who answered the poll think that he retires from North American hockey probably before the Olympics as a Flame. 25% thinks the Flames will just put him on the IR for the rest of the season. 25% of you also think we trade him back to the Penguins for nothing and he retires there this season. And 12% thinks he gets traded to another NHL team for very little. Nobody thinks he's going to be active for the rest of the season. You think everyone's got a pretty good assessment that he's just going to retire and fade away, Matt?
Well,
on the IR and fade away?
I think what Jágr will end up doing is waiting and seeing, like, especially with the Flames, like, they're in second. If the Flames continue to do well, I could see him just rehabbing all of his injuries, getting healthy again, practicing, and then playing again. And I think that he will be back with the Flames in the end part of the season. I don't see him disappearing.
Become like your farm team call-up where you give a guy like Janko a night off and in goes Jágr?
Well, it's one of those things that I think that you just play him when he feels like he's able to and play him.
I think if nothing else, having him hang around this team, even just in the dressing room, if we're going to be a playoff contender, you can never have too many guys like him hanging around.
Yeah, and plus he's been there so many times that...
Well, that's what I mean. Even if he's just eating popcorn, if he's, you know, our Freddie Hamilton.
Yeah, think of it being like Lanny McDonald in 89, where he didn't play every game. He played very sparingly, actually, and he was just there because he was the grizzled veteran who knew a lot about everything and was there.
And I have a feeling Jágr could have the best playoff beard this year.
Oh, hands down. It'll be a competition between him and Sam Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, Bennett's got a good one. I think Jágr, you know, he's got the salt and pepper going on. I think it's just going to be a better looking beard overall.
Yep.
Do you remember that movie Tim Allen's The Santa Claus where he shaves and the beard's back like 5 seconds later? That seems to be Bennett this year. Like, he's clean shaven one day and 2 days later he's got a full beard.
Yeah, well, he needs to grow the full ZZ Top. Go all the way.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe that'll be in the playoffs. You'll get someone who gets 2 minutes for holding the beard.
Yeah. Sort of like Nazim Kadri with Thornton.
Yeah, ripping parts of it out. What do you do with it? Do you put the parts you've ripped out on your helmet and look like Trump?
Not going there. Oh, my.
Well, let's talk about this week's poll instead of going there. What do you think the Flames' bye week does to their momentum? How do you think that having a week off is going to affect the momentum when the Flames do come back and take on Winnipeg, Buffalo, LA, and Edmonton over the next week? Do you think that it's going to get them more energized, they're rested, they're ready to go, and the streak will continue? Do you think they're going to lose their momentum and start racking up some losses? Do you think that the 7 games, as Matt said, kind of resets things and they play about 500 hockey for the rest of the month? Or do you think they go back to being what we've seen for most of the season of kind of being a streaky team? Let us know what you think. You can vote on the poll by going to firesidechat.ca or on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/firesidechat. And we'll have the poll there, or on Twitter, we're at Fireside Podcast. So go to any one of those places, click on the link, vote on the poll. We'd be curious to see what you guys think about how this bye week is going to affect the team. If nothing else, I think it's a great time for the bye week. I think after a 7-game win streak, you know, they deserve a rest. They've kind of earned that bye, but I do worry that it could take them a little bit out of their game.
Well, they need to not get an ego from, oh, we won 7 games in a row, and take Winnipeg lightly, or take Buffalo lightly, or LA, or Edmonton. Those are the 4 games following. And if the Flames cannot get in their own way, and I think that was a large part of the problem in the early part of the season, was that it wasn't so much other teams beating Calgary as it was Calgary beating themselves. And I think that with the 7-game winning streak, they have not been doing the little stupid things that were getting in their way. And I think that with this bye week, if they start to act like, oh, well, we can just beat anybody because we're awesome because we won 7 games, then you're going to start to see the exact same crap that you saw for the first 3 months of the season. And I think that the team needs to just keep on playing well and have that focus on the details. And like, Winnipeg is a very good team and they need to be on the top of their game in order to get 2 points, and they have to pay attention to Patrick Laine just like they did with Kucherov and Stamkos the other day. So it's possible that they can do that, but they have to be ready for a puck drop on Saturday.
I'm not so much worried about them getting cocky or getting that in their head. I'm more worried about, you've maybe been on vacation, you've maybe had a little too much to drink during that time. Are you ready physically to go? You get those, you know, you can see those guys in training camp too. They've had some time off and they're just not ready to go. And I'm hoping that these guys keep themselves in top mental and physical form. I'm hoping that maybe this time re-energizes them. Some of the guys will get to see their kids. Some of them will get to see their family. I know Gullitson said he's most looking forward to just driving his kids to school. So I'm hoping it acts more as a time to re-energize than it is to kind of, you know, take your eye off the prize.
True. And hopefully that they don't skip a beat. We'll see. And thankfully they have 2 easy games in the next 4.
2 games to get them going again.
Yeah, like the Buffalo and Edmonton games, they should win, frankly.
Well, let's talk about the week coming up, shall we, Matt?
Yep.
This week is the first of, it looks like, 3. We've talked about it, it's kind of a weird schedule. The first of 3 times this season, we play 2 matinee games in the same weekend. We had a matinee, or in the same week, not same weekend, but the same week, on the weekends either side of the week. We had Sunday a matinee game against Carolina, and on the 20th, the Flames returned to action in Calgary against Winnipeg. That's a 1 p.m. Mountain start. On the 22nd, they're also here at the Dome playing against the Buffalo Sabres, a regular 7 p.m. start. And the 24th, they'll be taking on the LA Kings. That could be a big game for this team at 8 p.m. And the night after, on Thursday, the 25th, they're in Edmonton for a 7 p.m. start against the Oilers. Four games this coming week. How do you think we're going to do?
Well, they need to get 6 points again this week. And
11-game win streak?
Well, that would be awesome, but being realistic, the only game that they absolutely need to win is the LA game. Every other one, if they lost, yeah, it would suck, but it wouldn't be the end of the world.
I'll give an addendum there. They have to win LA in regulation.
True.
Like, we've talked about coughing up points.
Yeah.
You cannot cough up a point to the team who's 1 point behind you.
Exactly. I agree. 100%. And as for the other teams, like, if they lost to Edmonton, yeah, okay. And have fun with your lottery. You know, same with Buffalo. Like, who cares?
Do you put Riddick in Edmonton?
Yeah, definitely. The other ones, Winnipeg, it'd be nice to get the 2 points, but if they didn't, like, there's no real overlap between us and Winnipeg, so it doesn't really matter. So, you know, because Winnipeg's going to be one of the top three teams in the Central, so it's not like we're talking a wild card team anyway. So
I think Winnipeg is a game very similar to what the Minnesota game and the Tampa Bay game were last week for the Flames. If it's a game to show that we can be competitive against a competitive team.
Yeah, I agree. And if they come out on the losing end, it's like, that sucks.
Well, it depends how they lose.
True.
If definitely. They get blown out by that team, then you go, maybe this team isn't what we think they are. But if they can be competitive, even if they lose by one or two, as long as you can be competitive. Like, even in that Minnesota game, if we would have lost in OT, we still played a good game. So I think that if you can be competitive against Winnipeg, you're showing, okay, maybe we are a playoff-ready team.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the key. Like, realistically, if the Flames play like the Flames should play, they should win most of the games against the crap teams like Buffalo, like Edmonton, and be able to hold their own against the better teams like the LA Kings and the Winnipeg Jets and Vegas when they play them. That's next week. So we'll see. They have a lot of games against mediocre teams and a lot of games against good teams. And each is important. This team should beat most. Like, they should have, like, a 750 winning percentage against the mediocre teams. And they should have at least a 500 against the better teams. So, we'll see.
So against Winnipeg, W or L?
I would go with a loss there and winning the other three.
Okay. I'm looking at this. I think the Flames are going to have their momentum coming out against Winnipeg. I think they'll win that one. I hate to say it. I think they're going to win the three at home. I think they'll beat Winnipeg, beat Buffalo, beat LA. And we've had such bad luck against Edmonton. I think they're going to drop the Oilers game. And I hate for the streak to stop against the Oilers. But just something, my spidey senses are telling me.
McDavid's going to score four goals, and then we're just going to be hearing nothing about how McDavid's super amazing.
I just think that, you know, if you look back at the Flames Oilers, we haven't done well against these guys this year, last year. And I think, especially in Edmonton, I can just see that.
Well,
the Oilers,
you got to figure that the games against Calgary are Edmonton's Stanley Cup. So, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs.
I thought their Stanley Cup was Bill Daly holding up their logo at the lottery.
Well, that's their off-season Stanley Cup. You know, for games that actually matter on ice, the games against Calgary are their most important. Because realistically, they're not, even for like the next 2 or 3 years, the Oilers are not going to do a damn thing.
All right, I'm going to go, we win Winnipeg, we win against Buffalo, we win against LA, we lose to Edmonton. And then we'll talk about the Vegas game when we get there. But That's going to be a toss-up for me, too. But I'm going to go 6 points in the week. All three home games, the Flames win. And I think they also need to keep that momentum going at home. They're really good on the road, but they've got a lot of home games coming up. And I think we got to keep that home momentum
going. And I'll do the opposite end of the week where we lose the first one, win the last three. You're going win the first three, lose the last one.
So. I'm okay if that happens too. I'm okay if we lose against Winnipeg. Like you said, it really doesn't matter. I think if we do lose against Winnipeg, Buffalo's a good rebound game.
Yeah. Exactly. And
we can't lose against LA, and I worry that we're gonna we can't give up a point. We can't even lose in overtime. We gotta close LA out in three periods.
Yes. And hopefully they can just keep rolling along, but you know, hoping for an 11-game winning streak is a little
We're
going to
lose.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, you know, we're not going to win every game from here on out. We're going to lose.
Although that would be awesome.
It's not going to happen, Matt.
It would be awesome.
It would be, but it's not going to happen.
True.
That's like that Disney movie, Angels in the Outfield, right? It's, oh, you know, our family will be reunited if the Angels win the pennant. They win the pennant. Like, you know, we don't have angels working for this team.
No.
The hockey gods aren't going to come. It's not going to happen. It would be cool, but it's not going to happen.
No.
If that happens, we're going to make a sacrifice.
Like, well, we already had Jobu in the locker room, so maybe we're just getting the delayed reaction from that.
Could be. I don't know. I think this team's got to do 6 points. They've got to win that LA game. And that's what's really going to solidify them. And then they've got a big road trip in February, which we're doing better on the road. Could be good or could be bad. But I think that right now things are so tight, we just got to get the points.
Yeah, like it, to get the points. Yeah, like it really doesn't matter. Just get 6 points. Like I don't care who. Like even if they won Winnipeg, Buffalo, and Edmonton, and lost the LA game, it'd be like, that sucks. But hey,
you've still gained enough runway on LA at that point. It's probably okay, but
yeah, like it would suck, but we got 6 points. Who cares? It's just one team. Who cares?
Yeah. Just looking at the schedule, though, there's games coming up like the LA game that we just can't be coughing up points in. I mean, we see even in March, San Jose, twice in a week. Like we've got to be able to.
You
got to
get. Yeah, 4 points hopefully against them. You just got to start putting our divisional opponents away, period.
Exactly. We got LA, we got Vegas. That'll be another big game coming up. So
yeah, the four main playoff caliber teams, Anaheim, LA, San Jose, and Vegas, we just have to beat them, period. End of story.
And, you know, I'm okay if the team wants to take a night off, if they're hurt. You know, Edmonton's a good night to do that. Like, if we want to say, hey, let's rest some guys, let's try something different, let's put Riddick in, that's the night to do it.
Yep, I agree.
Get your big win against LA, and then, okay, Edmonton, have your way with us.
Well, no.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, we'll put a reduced squad on the ice if we have to, you know, and go from there. We get 4 days off after that, so I don't know. We'll see. You're right. Not have your way with us, but you might play without a full deck in that one.
Yeah,
I'm hoping you don't, because our guys have a week of rest, but this is about the time guys start getting banged up.
Yeah. Well, that's the important thing for the Flames to get rested up, because the next few months, it's basically every other day, no real practice time. And
I can see LA banging us up pretty good the night before, too.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to have the Stockton guys playing so well. So especially when the guys get back, that you can know that, Hathaway's doing really well, or Mangiapane's doing really well. So in case any of the other players get banged up, you already know that those guys are ready to go.
Yeah, and I mean, that I think if there's one thing this year that we might look back on at the end of the year and say, what was the Flames' key to victory? It was a deep bench.
Yep.
We're seeing guys here aren't going to be number three forwards. They're not going to be top three guys. They're not going to be they're not going to be top three forwards. They're not going to be top two defenders, but we've got a deep bench that's keeping us going.
Yeah, and we have probably 18 NHL caliber forwards right now in organizationally, and probably 9 NHL defensemen.
Yeah,
so
we haven't had to make the call to Tanner Glass to come bail us out.
No, so we're fine. If we get banged up. Like, it's not like you're playing some guy who, like, just play him, like, 2 minutes. And, like, hopefully he doesn't screw up in the 2 minutes.
Or like in 04, which is like, who is this guy?
Brennan Evans.
Where did
Evans.
He come from?
Yeah, Brennan Evans.
You there with the red jersey.
Yeah. Hey,
come play over here.
Hey, you're a body. You can play. Yes.
We drafted you at some point, right? Great.
Yeah.
Come on over.
You have a contract. Sure. You're great. Come on down.
What? I have a contract? You do now, son. Come on down.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, and that's where I think there's jobs to be had, and I think that this next part of the season is going to be make or break for guys like Hathaway to either earn the job or not.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I mean, I think it's his for this season, but come October next year.
Yeah, well, that's the key with all of these players is seeing what you have. And like that, to harken back to our conversation earlier, like that's why you need to see what Klimchuk, Poirier, and Shinkarik have down in Stockton. So that way you can start evaluating for next year on, okay, you have the expectation that, say, Klimchuk is ready for the NHL, or he needs to show more. We'll keep him in the organization like Wotherspoon, but he needs
to
show more.
And to be fair, they've seen enough of those guys. Like, just like Wotherspoon, you don't need to see what he can do in the A. You know what you've got there.
Yeah.
He's been around the organization
exactly.
long enough.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. Like, with everything, we'll see. It takes time.
Well, Matt, we'll see you next week. Enjoy the rest of the bye week, and let's hope we can rack up some points when the Flames come back to the Dome.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have an awesome January, and we'll be back sometime soon.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.